Welcome, everyone, to Transformation Talks. The intention of our podcast is to provide tips, strategies, and inspiration to transform workplaces, communities, and lives. I'm Cheryl Wilson. I'm the co-founder and chief mindset and growth officer at Transforming Culture Consultants. And I have with me today our other co-founder, Cindy Lacom, who is our chief impact and inclusion officer. Today, we want to talk about how we might better see bullying and understand its dynamics. We have to name a problem before we can see it, and we have to see a problem in order to solve it. In our last podcast, we talked about having a Martian perspective. It's really what TCC does, is to have an objective perspective in these kinds of topics. So we invite you into that perspective. Cindy?
Yeah, so I think, as you say, it's really often difficult to see a dynamic when you're in the midst of it. And one of the ways in which we know that that happens is with the example of bullying. Bullying can impact us even if we're not the victims. In fact, often if we're not the victims, we're still impacted by it. I think that the stereotype is this playground bully who demands money and threatens to beat you up if you don't hand it over. But it's often, I think, a lot more subtle than that. When we look at definitions of workplace violence, it's actually defined as any act or threat of physical violence, which is perhaps what most of us think about, but also harassment, intimidation, or other threatening, disruptive behavior that occurs at the worksite. So it can range from threats and verbal abuse to physical assaults. And in the worst-case scenario, of course, we think of workplace shootings. So I think that we need to really understand the dynamics of bullying. As you said, Sharon, and this is a quote actually taken from Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the concept of intersectional oppression. We have to name a problem to see it, and we have to see it to solve it. And when we think of bullying as the most extreme example, it means too often that we actually aren't able to see bullying dynamics, even when we're working in the midst of them. So I know, Sharon, you and I have talked a little bit about your own experiences in the corporate world. Do you want to say a little bit more about that now?
Yes, I would. I've had a number of experiences where there's this experience, I would say, of bullying at a very high level. In one company, I was a senior vice president of marketing, and the CEO actually really had an approach with another senior vice president that was very demeaning. He would put him down. You know, I didn't know how much of it was really between male egos, but it was the kind of thing that was passive aggressive. It was something that, you know, I really wished I could have said something, and we all really wish we could have said something, but this was the CEO. And even when I spoke with someone in HR about it, she said, you know, well, what are you going to do? I mean, it's the CEO of the company. How do you really approach that person and tell them that they're being inappropriate? But it made everyone very uncomfortable. Oftentimes, Cindy, it would be kind of approached in a joking kind of manner. So I think there was something that sort of made that more normalized. But as I watched it going on between these two people of power within the company, you know, where one was doing everything he could to make the other feel small, you know, from jokes or just comments or even comments about his appearance or anything of that nature. There just was a constant kind of thing that was going on. It just made me very uncomfortable. First of all, and I wasn't the one being bullied, but I really didn't know. I felt so disempowered because I didn't know what I really could do. So shortly after that, I was contacted by a recruiter and they were asking me about another position. And the one thing I said to the recruiter, which ultimately I did leave that company primarily because of that situation, but I told the recruiter, you know, I need to know what kind of culture I'd be joining because it was very important to me not to be in a toxic culture, which is really what I felt that really was. We really work a lot with people in the place of toxic cultures and what are toxic cultures and how to be able to make shifts in that. But it absolutely is a very demoralizing place to be. And it happens at all levels of an organization. But because that culture was so toxic for me, I couldn't continue to stay in that situation, even though I wasn't the one being bullied. Matter of fact, I didn't have any experience like that with the CEO or anyone in my organization. but it was something that just impacted me so significantly that I ultimately left the organization.
I think that's really a profound insight. I'm thinking now about all sorts of things. I want to say one thing, that is that your example does reflect national dynamic. What we know is that over 70% of employees leave their jobs. And I think we mentioned this last week. It's not because of salary or benefits, but because of bad management. And I'm not saying that managers are bullies or that they bully more often. But as you just said, when management accepts bullying behavior, workers don't feel like they can respond effectively. They often don't stay. I think about another thing is that is the barriers to reporting. And this is something when we do workshops on workplace bullying and workplace violence, we talk about those barriers to reporting because they're very real. They're incredibly powerful, but they can lead to, if you are a witness to bullying, to feeling disengaged, disempowered, and even guilty. We also know that the costs for workplace violence are incredibly high. A couple of years ago, what we know is it cost businesses in the United States about $36 billion per year. So the costs and the stakes are really high. I also want to say you and I have thought a lot and talked a lot about the shift to social media and online work. And there's something that I wanted to share with listeners, and that's what's called in social media theory, the Gyges effect, spelled G-Y-G-E-S. And it's the idea that, simply put, anonymity fosters meanness. It's based on an old Greek myth about a shepherd who finds a ring that gives him a cloak of invisibility. And while he's wearing the ring, he's a nice guy, right? He buys this ring, he tries it on, he goes to the court where he would never be allowed, but he can go in because he's invisible. He falls in love with the queen, and so he kills the king. And the point of this myth is exactly the point of the Gyges effect theory, which is that when we're behind a screen and we feel anonymous, we can say and do things that we would never do or say in person. And that includes bullying behaviors. So in some ways, if such toxic meanness, as you said, Jaren, is increasingly normalized, and I think that it is, I just want to point out that we also have the capacity to challenge and change it in our workplaces because any cultural shift like this one has the capacity to be changed. In my work, and I've done a lot of work in very difficult workplace cultures, I used to talk about creating a safe space. And I stopped. I'm in a think tank and we open every meeting with a comment about what's called gracious space. And it's a concept coined by the Center for Ethical Peace Studies at the University of Washington. In a gracious space, you invoke a spirit and a setting that invites the stranger to learn public. So you don't guarantee a safe space because when we're in a potentially toxic or bullying workplace culture, we aren't probably going to feel safe, even if, as you said, we're not the victims. Though a gracious space creates room for discomfort, it recognizes that there are voices which aren't present and which might not be heard. And this goes back to the barriers for reporting. We live in a really anti-tattletale world, and that's one strong barrier to reporting. So even when we have, for instance, a workshop or a meeting about workplace bullying, there's still a possibility that a voice may be present at that table, but choose to be silent because of all the pressure not to snitch. So what I like about the gracious space is one that both recognizes that there are people who could be present that aren't, and it creates a space to try to listen to and seek out those voices that are off. It's a practice, really. Gracious space is a practice. And when we join a group where respect is the norm, where we listen to others and invite the stranger to learn in public, then it becomes easier, I think, to recognize, to name, and then to call out or call in bullying behavior. And I just used a phrase which you may or may not know, but when you call someone in, that's really different. It's when someone does something that is potentially harmful or offensive. You talk to them one-on-one. You talk to them later. You might give yourself or them a little bit of time to think about it. You might start with, that's not how we do things at this juncture. It's really different than calling someone out, which you do in the moment, in public, And it's often because of behavior that's so offensive or egregious that you cannot let it go uncalled. Well, I think that even this, it's something that we talk a lot more about in the workshops, I think can be a really powerful tool to diminish bullying dynamics. Oh, I worked with one agency where when we talked about navigating difficult conversations and calling out versus calling in, across the board, the response initially was, if this happened, I'd call HR. If this happened, I'd call HR. We were using scenario trainings, and what blew me away was that some of these scenarios were pretty mild. It seemed to me that in an empowered workplace, staff would feel like they could say to a coworker, hey, I wanted to talk to you. I heard you say something the other day, and it didn't sit well with you. But they didn't even feel that they could say that. So I think that this is a mark of a workplace culture where bullying is a kind of invisible norm. So I'm going to offer just one small tip, and this is it. Try to start your meetings graciously. Start with a gracious statement. And I think starting with something positive really works. It can matter.
Yeah, we talked in our last podcast about the whole concept of starting your meetings with something positive in some kind of way, because that really does raise the energy. That really does, you know, create more of a positive mindset. And so this really piggybacks on that as well, this whole idea of having a gracious space. What was really interesting to me, too, as we were talking about this, Sunny, is that so often the kind of behaviors that we might see in our organizations, you know, we might not consider those bullying. And is the definition of bullying. I know when my daughter was in high school, they said that they had a zero tolerance.
Yes.
A zero tolerance policy for bullying. And yet, so many things she would come home and tell me about that she would say, I think that's bullying. They say, you know, well, what is the definition of bullying? And if they really do have this zero tolerance, or is that just what they'd like to have? And it really is lip service. So this is a really complicated and can be a very challenging experience. I know having worked in that particular situation where I was, you know, reporting to the CEO, yet the CEO was the one that was really driving that kind of normalized behavior. And what's also interesting, Cindy, is that as you would expect, that behavior, because it was normalized, because it was tolerated, accepted, it also had a trickle-down effect from other managers into their departments. And so, you know, there really is this top-down effect. There really is this ripple effect. So, you know, that really becomes a challenge when you're talking about people in higher positions that are really modeling this kind of behavior. How do you make changes? How do you impact things like that? And so, right. You know, as you said, we can start with starting our meetings with a gracious space, starting our meetings in a positive, looking for what's working. As we talked about on our last podcast, it really is, you know, a concept of called appreciative inquiry. And it really does make a difference, because when people focus on something that's working, we really don't access the part of our brain which is about problems and challenges. We're focused more on solutions, and that really it comes from brain science. So, you know, it's our intention to be a support and resource for you all to help navigate these unprecedented challenges in our workplace cultures and create thriving cultures that have a ripple effect that impacts us all in a positive way. So we would love for you to join our community of HR professionals, executive directors, and managers that are wanting to create a more empowered workplaces and organizations. You can get free tips and resources and opportunities to attend free virtual gatherings where you can engage with industry leaders and innovators, exchange ideas, strategies, and best practices. And you can go to transformingcultureconsultants.com/HR. We are also available to provide you with a free virtual consultation. Maybe there's something like this going on in your own workplace and you don't know how to even approach what's happening. So this is an opportunity to have a free virtual consultation. You can apply for that by going to transformingcultureconsultants.com/free application. You can connect with us on LinkedIn at Transforming Culture Consultants. And our vision is a world where employees feel happy, respected, valued, and safe. And thank you for being a part of this vision.
Thank you very much. And I hope that you'll let us be your merchants.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.